My guest today is a remarkable individual who has made fun the focus of his life and his career. Don Poynter started making toys at the age of 11 when he lived on the west side of Cincinnati. Since then, his career of creating toys, games, and novelty items has gained him worldwide recognition and acclaim. Some of his most popular items include a Jane Mansfield-shaped water bottle, whiskey-flavored chewing gum, the wastebasket backboard, the first talking toilet, and crossword puzzle toilet tissue, plus several other items that captured the attention of such public figures as Bob Hope, Jack Parr, and Johnny Carson. Now in his 90s, Mr. Poynter still enjoys keeping fun in his life and has many wonderful stories to share. Well, Don, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, I don't know how far you want me to go back, but during my high school years, I was a radio actor on WLW. And at that time, WLW was the most powerful station in the world. Now, they produced a show called Father Flanagan's Boys Town. Father Flanagan, I think, was in Nebraska. I had the lead on that program for about 8 years. My name on that program was Speck Murphy. So it was fun. Anyway, I then graduated from high school, Western Hills High School. I was drafted. When I got out of the Army, I ended up at UC, and I became the drum major there. And I used to twirl on tight wire, unicycles, 8-foot stilts, 2 batons, 3 batons, flames, knives, and so on.
And after you left UC, how did you go from doing that to creating toys and novelties?
I joined Sive Advertising, and we did a lot of commercials for Kenner Toys. In fact, in Kenner Toys, the first Easy Bake Oven, I produced and directed the first commercial. And believe it or not, my daughter, Molly, was the first Easy Bake Oven girl on television. I did that because she's the cheapest girl I could get.
Obviously, they're still making them. My daughter has one.
Oh, yes.
It's still a very popular toy.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal toy. And I remember we made so many commercials. I worked with the Steiner Group for Kenner for so many years, and mostly in the making commercials. So then one day I was with the agency, and I'm driving down a street, and I said, you know, what would be funny? Why not have whiskey-flavored toothpaste? Hey, that's pretty neat. So I told a lot of my friends about that. And hey, they all laughed. Hey, that'd be a great idea. So then later on, I came back to them and I said, would you like to invest in it? Oh, no, they didn't want to invest in it. So I had a fraternity brother who graduated with me at UC. He worked for the Central Bank, Central Trust. So I went into him and I said, hey, I have this idea and I need $10,000. Well, $10,000 was a lot of money in those days, but he was a fraternity friend. And hey, after all, we've got to help each other. So he gives me $10,000 to start this thing. And his father asked him one day, what does Poynter want this money for? He said, oh, he wants to make whiskey flavored toothpaste. What? Whiskey flavor? He almost fired his son, but I took that to New York, and they absolutely went wild, and I sold it for $1.50 a tube. That's what it was retail, $1.50 a tube. Toothpaste at that time was selling for 25 cents, and if I knew what I knew now, I would have charged two, and I would even send more, but it was written up in every publication. Life magazine came in to take photos of it. I was on What's My Line, and on What's My Line, I never could figure out what I did. So the other day, I was looking at some of my old memorabilia, and there it was, a copy of the letter from ABC stating they're giving me $50 for stumping the group. Oh, man. So it was fun, and believe it or not, we sold that for 17 years. And that was the start of my company. And then I produced a box that did nothing but switch itself off. It was a little small box, and it had a little lever, and you threw the lever, and a hand out of, came out of the box and shoved the switch off. So I took it to New York, and I showed it to all my jobbers. And they said, well, what does it do? I said, it does nothing. Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. So one jobber and one mail order house named Spencer Gifts. Well, about 2 weeks later, I get a telephone call from Spencer Gifts. And they say, I have no idea why, but I want to order 25,000. He said, it's the most volume of anything we've ever had in our magazine. And at one point, he even flew a private airplane into Cincinnati to find out if I could make them. So anyway, most of my jobbers were saying, oh, why don't you make it do something? So at that point, I said, yeah, maybe I should do that. So I heard that they were going to have a new program on ABC called The Addams Family. And they had seen a little box that had the switch. So I met with them in New York. They said they'd like to end up using that in their program. And they had called it The Thing. And I laughed. I said, well, I have something even better. This is the one with the hand will come out and grab the coin. And boy, I'll tell you, they jumped on that. And I paid them a royalty for putting it on their program. And it was called The Thing. And we sold, believe it or not, 14 million of those.
Wow.
We used to sell, remember, 25,000 a year on the Canary Islands. And the reason is that that was a tourist trap for all the Europeans. So they'd come there on the island, and they, oh, isn't that a cute thing? So they buy my thing. So I've had all that crazy, crazy items. Another one I had so much fun with, the Jane Mansfield. I finally reached her through her agent, and I said, I have this idea that I'd like to talk to her about. He said, what is that? I said, I want to make a hot water bottle out of Jane Mansfield figure. Oh, gee, well, I don't know about that. And at that time, I'm not sure she was with MGM or some major studio. And they were trying to make her into a serious actress. And she laughed about that. She said, I'm not a serious actress. So she loved the idea. And she said, yes, let's go ahead. So I went to Hollywood, and I spent a week with her, sculpting her figure.
Tough job.
Now, I could have done it in 2 days, but why rush?
Right, absolutely.
And thank God she modeled in a bikini, or I would have been there a month. So anyway, I finished the sculpturing there. And now in Cincinnati, I'd have a picture made of products, maybe $25, which I thought was reasonable. So I said to her, do you have any photographer out here? Because I have to have a shot with you holding the hot water bottle. I had painted it and so on, so it looked like what it might be in the final production. Oh, he says, yes, I have a very good photographer. His name was Peter Sumergian. He was a top photographer in Hollywood at that time. And I said, what does that cost? He said, oh, it's reasonable, $500 a shot. Well, I almost passed out, $500. But I had to act like I knew what I was doing. So sure. Anyway, I go to the studio, and the studio, just a blank studio, nothing but white walls, and there was two orange crates and a board. And I said, where's all the equipment? Well, of course, he had a couple light stands and so on. And he takes his blue cloth and lays it over the board. And prior to that, I wanted her in a negligee. And I said to her, you must have many, many negligees. So why don't you just pick one up and bring it to the shoot? She said, no, no, I sleep in the buff. Oh, do you? So now I had to go out and shop for Jane Mansfield. And I'm walking along the Hollywood Boulevard or wherever it was. And there's a little boutique there. And I go in. And there, oh, it's a cute little thing, little shorty, blue. Oh, it's wonderful. So I buy it. I show it to a press agent. And the press agent says, oh, my, we can't use that. You can see through it. I said, no, 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 no. You can punch it in the light reflection. You can hide anything you want. He's reluctant, but he gives it to her. She loves it. She loves it. So she puts it on. So you lay her out on this thing, and we take the picture. And I remember her agent would come over and take the gown and push it down on her leg. And he'd walk away, and she'd pull the gown up. And he'd go back and push it down, and she'd push it up. Finally, he gives up. Anyway, I end up with the most beautiful picture, and which we had sent to all the jobbers and so on. And it was very, very successful. We kept more men warm at night than you can think of. And Life magazine, they published a book. It's no longer published. Several years ago, with the 40 most memorable pictures in their history. And one of them was Jane Mansfield in her swimming pool with 1,000 of my hot water bottles floating all around her. Just sensational. And I did for Sears Roebuck, I designed Matchbox cars. Remember the little Matchbox?
Absolutely.
We all grew up with them. The company's name was Lesney. It was an English company, and their factory was in a little north of London in Leeds. So I designed this item for them and took to them, and they just thought it was incredible. It was a driving toy. You could take any one of their miniature cars, put it on this disc, and then there was a dashboard with gear shifts and speed things. So you could drive these little cars all around these things. And in the first year, they sold $750,000 worth of toys. So that was quite a hit. Before we came in here, someone mentioned he had one of our talking toilets. And right. What it was a little device that you hook underneath the seat, and a speaker and so on would go in back of the john, so you couldn't really see it.
Right.
So anybody sat down on the seat, a voice would say,
"Hey, I'm working down here."
And that voice was mine, because I couldn't find anybody any cheaper.
You got into a little bit of a scuffle, if you will, with Dr. Seuss himself.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss, his friend of mine, who happened to be involved in that episode I spoke of with the ABC. This party I had with ABC and the thing, he called me one day and he said, "I have purchased all the rights for Liberty Magazine." Liberty Magazine was published twice a week, and it was a 5-cent publication, and it was started during the Depression. Bernard McFadden owned it. He owned quite a few magazines, Saturday Evening Post, all these well-known publicated books. And this friend of mine said, in this publications that were run by Liberty, there is a series of drawings by Dr. Seuss, and it predated his Cat in a Hat and all those crazy animals that he produced. Wonderful books. So he said, now I've talked to Dr. Seuss' agent and asked, would they want to buy these rights back? And they said, no, we don't want to do that. So he said, okay. So he asked me, would you like to buy these rights? So I would then take his drawings and make 3-dimensional figures from it and then put it on the market. So we agreed to that. I made these models and so on, took them to Japan at that time. We made them there, and they were absolutely sensational sellers. We had every major store, Macy's, Gimbel's, Sears, all of them were handling this. We're now in New York at the gift show, and a guy walks in with an injunction saying, you cannot sell these. They sued me. And as my patent attorney said, boy, oh boy, you're something. I have never had a customer or client that was sued for $10 million. This has to do with copyright. And believe it or not, it's the first time in the history of the copyright law that anything was ever taken through the court system. That trial was written up in every legal publication. It was taught in law schools. time. Every major publication had it. And what a story that was. The court system at that time was so crowded in New York. This was in the federal court system because it was in copyright. So the judge, the trial was held in his chamber. Now, here are the people that were against me and my fellow that had the rights. Bennett Cerf, who was the head of Random House, who I had already met on What's My Line. He was one of the panelists. The other was Leland Hayward, who was the producer of Mary Martin and South Pacific. That was his wife. Lou Lisby, who was the head of all merchandising for Disney. And I knew him from previous, I had a number of deals from Disney, so I knew him. The other fellow was the fellow that did the sculpturing and statue of Iwo Jima that's in Washington. The other fellow was Chuck Jones, who created Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig and so on. All these powerhouses, plus, of course, Dr. Seuss. And they had the most powerful number one legal firm in New York. And here are two guys. This is really their first case. And that case made them. It was sensational. Anyway, it takes a long time to explain the story, but it was almost like Perry Mason. They were saying that I could not take two-dimensional pictures and make three-dimensional figures out of it. And I said, that's ridiculous, because Dr. Seuss would simply take an animal and take the body of a pig, as an example, and put legs like a horse. Those things, you know what they look like because they're from natural animals or whatever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'd have, say, Lou Lisby of Disney would get on the stand. The first thing he said, he had no idea why he was there. And they asked him about this. He said, I don't know, but boy, I'll tell you one thing. Those are saleable. And they almost killed him, I think. So anyway, the idea that they would have these products and they would make sure that it was exactly what they would relate to their drawings. As an example, Bugs Bunny would have what they call heads. It'd be like five heads, so the feet are a certain dimension and so on. So they're exact. That night, we would go out and shop up and down Broadway and go in and get a Bugs Bunny. You really wouldn't know it was a Bugs Bunny except it had the name Bugs Bunny. The next day, we'd give it to our lawyers, and the lawyers would ask the defendant, would you mind describing how you create and approve new items? And they'd go over, then they'd show him this monstrosity, and they were flabbergasted. They couldn't explain it. Well, this went on and on. But the end of the trial, I remember the judge called me over and say, I've got a lot of nephews and grandchildren. Would you mind if I had all those?
Exhibit A.
I said, be my guest. So we're going down on the elevator after the trial. Their lawyers are in the same elevator and my lawyer. We walk out of the elevator and they walk out and they walk away. And our lawyers turned to us and said, do you know what? They think they won this trial. Well, as it turned out, the decision was reached maybe about 2 months later because there's so much money involved that they tried to expedite it. And they didn't win one thing. So he ended up firing his lawyers and hired another group to find out if they should appeal. They were so solidly in our favor, they suggested, no, you do not appeal. So they ended up buying all the rights back from us for $200,000 and allowed us to sell all the ones we had coming in. And mm-hmm. I had $300,000 coming in on the water. So we sold those. Said it worked out pretty good. But it was the most exciting 2 weeks I think I've ever spent in my life. It was wonderful. But I must say that because we won.
Of course. Right.
Oh, this is another funny story. I was going to make a do-it-yourself voodoo kit, but I wanted it authentic. So I flew to Haiti because that's where it started. I finally located an entrepreneur. I really think it was the only entrepreneur on the island. And he was the entrepreneur for one reason. He had the boiler that they used to steam the wood. You can't carve wood without that steaming. So I make a deal with him that he is to make these straw dolls, hand-woven straw dolls, where you would take the pin and stick in. And then I had two pins, a black pin and a white pin. It was hand-carved. And the day that I signed a deal with him, his boiler blew up. And he swears to God that the voodoo gods were punishing him.
For making a deal.
Yeah, but the bag that I put it in, we had chicken feathers in it, a whole lot of stupid thing, mm-hmm. and a sheet with different incantations, how to get even with your boss and so on and so forth. But the bags were made in Brooklyn.
Well, Mr. Pointer, it's been a wonderful experience sitting here talking with you. I wanted to ask you just one last question. You're in your 90s. Has having fun kept you young?
Yes. I've had an absolutely phenomenal life. Everything I did was try to entertain people one way or the other, either the radio or TV or twirling batons. It was so much fun.
My guest has been Mr. Don Pointer, inventor, toy maker, and noted expert on fun. You can find links to more information about his life and his creations at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. And to help you get in the mood for the holidays, there is a special Kenner Toys exhibit going on now through January 6th at the Public Library downtown. I'm Jim Nolan.